And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We take you up till the top of the hour, breaking down all the latest for the New York Giants. The players are back. Spring workouts are underway. We'll get to that in a little bit, but we're also going to continue our preparation for the upcoming NFL draft as we preview some of the top prospects from various schools. Today, the focus is going to be Tennessee, and we are now joined on the phones by Rhiannon Potke, who covers Tennessee football for the Knoxville News Sentinel. Rhiannon, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, and looking forward to the upcoming NFL draft, and I'm sure you've been monitoring the prospects from this year's class and how they're going to pan out in the upcoming draft. So let's start with some of the defensive prospects, and the first one that comes to mind is obviously Derek Barnett, the defensive end who made quite a name for himself, breaking Reggie White's career mark in sacks. What is it about his game that jumps out to you from some of the previous pass rushers that have come out of Tennessee?
Yeah, his technical skills are supreme. I mean, he really has worked on his craft, his, you know, hand placement, his jump off, you know, off the snap. Just he's just really technically sound. I know a lot of people with, you know, some of his numbers don't jump off the page like Myles Garrett. That's kind of the tag that he's just not quite as freak of an athlete. But he really makes up for that in terms of his technical ability and his work ethic and his training. I mean, the guy just has a motor. He's so intensely focused on his craft. He always just thirsts to get better all the time. It was just amazing. You know, they'd win a game and he would be, you know, that's great, but next week I got to face this guy. It was like really no time to enjoy it because he just was constantly wanting to improve and get better. And he's just really a student of the game and a student of that position. So that's what's one thing that stuck out to me. I've never really covered someone that was just so into perfecting that part of it. And, you know, like I said, he doesn't, his numbers in terms of the 40 and, you know, jumping and everything, they won't wow someone compared to a Myles Garrett. But I think if you watch the tape and watch his production, most of those sacks came against SEC teams. He rarely got sacks against – I mean, he didn't compile sacks against, you know, some of the 1AA schools or, you know, some of the lower-level schools. They were – I think it was 29 of those sacks were against SEC teams.
Well, I think a lot of people think he will go in the top third of the first round. I think that's pretty safe because they share your opinion. Just to give you some of those numbers from the combine, the folks out there watching our show, 4.88 was what I saw in the 40, 6.3, 2.59. What I saw, Rhiannon, if you'll address this, when I saw him on tape, I saw him, if he's going to play a 4-3 defensive end in the NFL, I think he's going to have to add some bulk to that frame. I'm a little concerned at 259. I know some guys like tweeners, and they think that that's okay. I'd like to see him get up to 265, 270. And I also thought if there were some things to nitpick on him, he needs more moves in his pass rushing repertoire, and I thought he missed too many tackles for my liking.
Yeah, there's definitely things. I agree with you. I think he's also been, we were asking him during the after the pro day that some teams are actually looking at him having to do linebacker drills too because of that very reason. You know, they're having to maybe do both. I think it's really going to be what situation he gets into and what system and kind of the team that gets him and what they do with him. There is definitely room to improve, and he knows that. I mean, he's still got a lot of upside. I mean, he still has a lot of learning that he can do, and I think if he gets, it's definitely going to be different once you get to the NFL. Obviously, everything is, you know, you're playing against guys that are, you know, equal or better to you every single day in every single position. So, I think it's just going to come down to who he can get under and who can teach him. I mean, I think the system's going to be really big for him. And I think as much as you want to go high, I think the fit for him, it would be a good thing. I think if he can go somewhere that really fits him, he might, you know, like that better than just the status of saying I was drafted at this spot. I mean, I know there's financial implications that come with that, and I understand that part of it. But sometimes, you know, you can add a few years to your career if you get in a system that suits you better, you know. So I think that's going to be a key part of it. I mean, I've seen him anywhere from 8 to down to in the low 20s. So it's kind of all over the board right now in terms of the teams that are looking at him.
You've seen him drop that far. What has been the conversation around Tennessee, if you don't mind me asking, about teams who may be interested in him?
Yeah, I mean, we really haven't heard much. I mean, at the pro day, we get to talk to him a little bit. Everyone here is biased, you know, in terms of inside the system. They think, especially Tennessee fans, they don't think Garrett should go ahead of him, but that's because they're completely biased. And, you know, so it's hard to kind of shuffle out that. I mean, we got to talk to him for a little bit at the pro day, not much. He's been very kind of closed off and just training. I mean, he's a, you know, when you get him, he's very polite, but he just, there wasn't much time with him to even kind of pick his brain on who's looking at him or anything. I think he was even kind of hesitant to say who he's worked out for. There's been some teams that, you know, that have leaked out that he's been to. I know he's represented by Rosenhaus, so a few of those things have gotten out. But, you know, around here, people love him. So it's hard. Like I said, I haven't gotten much objection. There's a little, I can't say it's complete objectivity, but they just, you know, everyone inside Tennessee, all the coaches just raved about him. Like they, you know, Bob Shoup, who's, you know, seen a lot of good defensive players in his time, just was just so impressed with him, you know, all the time. Just like they said, his attention to detail. He's a really cool, he's pretty soft spoken. He's not very, you know, but he can talk some trash. I know there was a few games where he was getting pretty chippy out there with some guys. So if you tick him off, he can get a mean streak to him. But yeah, here it's hard to say what we're hearing because a lot of it is funneled through Tennessee, you know, these orange glasses. So,
sure, of course.
And I've talked to the same guys you guys, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, mm-hmm. those guys, and they all say that, you know, I think Jeremiah said he kind of reminds them of Terrell Suggs, where, you know, not maybe that level. He doesn't want to jump to, like, put that pressure. But in terms of just some people, you know, they just completely looked at the workout stuff, and Terrell Suggs never kind of fit that, and look how productive he was. And so that's kind of what he's thinking, that maybe Barnett can be that just in terms of productivity.
Yeah, I like his skill set. I think what's going to have to happen is the NFL team that gets him is going to have to put some polish on him. It requires some of the assistant coaches to do some of the work to make him the true star player that he can fully be. Go ahead.
Well, Rhiannon, you mentioned that obviously the sacks jump off the page, but I'm curious from what you've seen from first down, second down to third down, was he an every down guy that stayed on the field? What I guess I'm getting at is how effective is he in terms of stopping the run, which may not show up in the box score, as opposed to his ability to get to the quarterback?
Yeah, I think he does have work to do there. I mean, his big thing was getting the quarterback off the edge. Tennessee run defense, you know, he was getting a lot of double and triple teams last year too, so it was somewhat hard to tell sometimes what was his, like, what he was missing or what he was just completely getting blocked out. Because I saw some teams honestly send four guys at him, because that's how depleted Tennessee's defensive line was. They knew that no one else was going to really do anything, so let's just stick everyone on Barnett. And their run defense was atrocious last year. I mean, one of the worst I've ever seen. In terms, they gave up, like, one stretch, I think they gave up over 400 yards, like, in four straight games against, you know, middling SEC teams. So it was – their defense was really hard hit by injuries last year. So it was really hard to see last year. I mean, I went back and tried to look, and it was just – he had so many things coming at him that I couldn't tell if that was his responsibility or if he just, you know – but they just had a complete system breakdown with the run defense last year. So I think you really have to get it. Yeah, like I said, it was just hard to tell from someone that's not in the, you know, not in the meetings and talking to them about it. But he was, in fairness, he was getting a lot of, you know, double, triple, even, like, say, quadruple teams run at him last year. So, but I do think he needs to improve that. I mean, he definitely is known more as a pass rusher and, you know, just getting to the quarterback, getting off the edge. I think he really can get better in that aspect of his game.
Talking with Rhiannon Pocky, who covers Tennessee football for the Knoxville News Sentinel. Two other players on defense before we jump over to offense, Rhiannon. Cameron Sutton, the cornerback, and then Jalen Reeves-Maybin, the linebacker. I know Reeves-Maybin coming off of injury, so there's some question marks there. And Sutton may be more of a question mark in terms of his size and whether he'll be an outside corner versus a slot corner. What have you seen specifically out of those two?
Yeah, Reeves-Maybin, you know, obviously that shoulder injury. He's had shoulder issues. That's going to be what's really going to give teams a little pause.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, he's still kind of, he said he was at about 85-90% by pro day here. He, you know, skipped some drills. So that's going to be the big tag on him. I mean, when he was in the lineup, he was good for Tennessee. You know, he wasn't in the lineup much last year because he got injured pretty early. The good thing about him, though, I have to say, I mean, if you're looking for intangibles, he and Sutton both. Sutton got injured as well. He fractured
his foot,
that ankle.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They still showed up at every single game. They were every single practice. They stood through the whole practice. They were still, I mean, if you're looking for intangible stuff that maybe, you know, just they were actually team captains last year, and they did not short shrift that responsibility. They attended every single game unless they were in surgery. So, and they were still guys that were, they even went to, like, you know, the video, the film room with their other, you know, position players. So, like, on the field, we didn't get to see much, but they really showed some character through those actions, in my opinion, because that's stuff where you can just, you know, you can just focus. And Sutton didn't even really have to come back if he didn't want to. He could have just said, I'm just going to focus on the draft. So you kind of give him some points for that. Like I said, it was hard to tell on field yet last year. Sutton started to kind of get his feet under him more once the bowl game rolled around. You kind of got to see glimpses. Mm-hmm. But I think he really, really helped his stock with the Senior Bowl and even the Pro Day and the Combine, because he was willing to play any spot in secondary. He played, you know, nickel, safety, corner, and he can return kicks.
Yeah.
So that special teams component is huge. And I think a lot of teams, you know, he was pretty high on draft boards his first three years at Tennessee. He started as a freshman. But this last, because of the injury, I asked him, were you afraid you dropped? You know, were you afraid the teams were just – he said he wasn't. He said he was fairly confident. But you got to imagine that he might have been a little scared. That his, you know, but I think he did a huge boost back to where he was with the postseason and with some of these, you know, the events like the Senior Bowl. I think, I talked to a lot of guys who were at the Senior Bowl, and they were very impressed with his ability to play so many multiple positions and also, you know, the special teams role. They question, like you said, the size is a question. But they feel like his versatility maybe can make up for some of that.
Yeah, listing him at 5'11", 188 with a 40 time of 4.52. Got him down to starting 45 games at Tennessee. And the other note that I had, Rhiannon, is I'm writing here because when I watch the tape, I write down adjectives that I like and don't like about a player. I liked his hands. I thought he was a good closer. He seemed to be very crafty, and he seemed to be more physical for his frame and his size, which, of course, in the NFL, if you're going to play that way, you better get some strength in that upper body because they'll make you pay for it if you're a little too lean upstairs.
Yeah, he's a thicker guy. He definitely is, and he's not afraid to mess it up. I mean, he's a really nice guy off the field, but he on the field, you can see he's not afraid to get up there. And he realizes, yeah, I think he realizes he has to do that. You know, I think
yeah.
He knows, like, you know, like anyone, if you have a deficit, you do something to make up for it. And so, I think he's learned that he's got to do that. And like I said, we didn't get to see much of him this year, but I was just impressed with the fact that he tried to come back. Because, you know, he didn't have to. I mean, mm-hmm. He could have just said, I'm done. And I don't know if it, especially that way that defense was playing, you know, he didn't have much help around him when he came back. So, and there was a lot of young black backs in that defensive back. So I just give him a lot of credit for even making the attempt because, you know, the earlier results he was okay, but there was, you know, getting back on that ankle. You don't look good on film all the time when you're trying to adjust to having just broke your ankle, you know, and recovering. So, but he rounded back into form. And, yeah, he's been, like I said, he was a four. He would have been, he's basically a four-year starter here.
Yeah.
If he played every game this season, which he didn't get to. I think he missed six games with that ankle. But, yeah, so he definitely upper body. And they got a new strength and conditioning coach here, Rob Gullickson, who was with the Rams. And he's been staying on campus here, him and Jalen Reeves-Maven, and they've been working out here. So I have to assume Rock's kind of been helping them a little bit, too. Obviously, their agents have placed them
sure.
You know, some places. But
it's
think now
that they're
back on campus, they've been picking his brain a little bit.
Well, I definitely think he's got to make it great to help somebody's depth chart in the secondary, no question. And how high he goes, I'm sure the foot injury has something to do with it and may drop him just a tad. But it's also a very deep drafted corner, which is also going to hurt his chances a little bit. But I'm sure he's going to make somebody's team. I want to ask you about offense. I don't know how much time you have, Rhiannon, because I think you were limited today. But Alvin Kamara, to me, may be one of the most, if not the most versatile running back that will be taken in the first two rounds of this draft. I'd like to get a thumbnail on him from you, if you would.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I was amazed that when I saw him here. I mean, I think the thing with everyone's wondering why he didn't play as much, and that's the big tag on him, and I honestly don't have an answer for that. There was another back here, Jalen Hurd, who eventually just quit the team in the middle of the season last year, so I think if that says enough to you, maybe that was something that was an issue and the reason he wasn't used as much. There could have been a little bit of ego struggle there in terms of the coaching staff and him and the demand. I don't have insight into that completely, but this stuff I've heard and gleaned. So he wasn't used as much, and I was always shocked. Like, every time he was on the field, he made a play. And not only that, he can catch out of the backfield. He's so multidimensional. He returns kicks, another kick returner.
Punt returns and kickoff returns, both.
Yeah, he's pretty much what you're looking for now in an NFL back in terms of being able to catch his space, being able to run routes, being able to, you know, he can pretty much do it all. He had a knee injury this year, too. Tennessee, the whole team was basically injured. But he came back from that, too, and didn't miss a beat. And he, you know, shed the brace within a while. And when he's on the field, their offense was so much more dynamic. And I think that's the word that always pops in my mind with Alvin is dynamic because he has so many ways to beat you. And he's really deceptively strong. Like, you look at him, you don't think, like, oh, maybe he'll easily get taken down. But, I mean, he made some plays this year where he completely just, you know, shed a tackle where I thought there's no way. And he kind of just darts through holes. So I think he's really going to be someone, and he's risen, like you said, his stock has just gone through the roof since he declared for the draft.
You know what blows me away?
Seeing that same thing too.
What blows me away about him is that everybody talks about McCaffrey because he is truly the prototype of the Swiss Army knife, so to speak. But Kamara is as versatile as he is, and probably has a little more quicks. To be perfectly honest with you, because McCaffrey's a little bit bigger, a little stronger frame. But, I don't know why this kid didn't get a lot of the accolades McCaffrey got, because he is a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, I think it's because he never had more than 18 carries in a game, ever, 18 touches sometimes. He just was very underutilized his first year here. And then by the process of elimination, when Jalen Hurd decided he didn't want to play here anymore, he got more, and he started to show, like, what everyone, that was the biggest thing. Everyone's always like, why isn't he in the game? Because they were kind of forcing a certain system. And I think once they realized, their hand was forced and he had to play, they realized, geez, we should have probably been doing this a lot more, So he really got to showcase that. And the credit to him, though, he never complained one bit. I mean, the guy's personality is amazing. If you guys ever get a chance to talk to him, he's a crack up. I mean, he would use like standing on his head during practice with his helmet on, like stand. I actually, this weekend, I was going through Twitter, and he crashed a senior graduate photo shoot and just took photos with the girl, and like his friend knew her. So he has a really fun personality, and he takes football seriously, but he's also a real team guy, and he just likes to have fun, and he likes to kind of just be a little loose. Which, I know some teams are always hesitant, like, is it too loose? It's not to show that he doesn't care. I just think he kind of has it in perspective, and he really loves the game, and he kind of likes to have fun. And I think he's a good locker room guy for that reason. People love him. I mean, you look at him, he's got, like, a nose ring, and you're kind of like, whoa. And he's got a grill, and everyone's kind of, you're like, should we scare him? But he's holding babies, and he's flopping. So it's just funny. It's kind of like you don't judge a book by its cover. That's kind of Alvin, because he's got the greatest personality you'll ever want. And I just think that kind of helped, because he could have complained, and he could have just been like, pouting, and I don't want to be here, I'm not getting carries. But he never did. He just kind of made the most of what he got, and looked for it, and it's really helped him, because now he's obviously Hurd's still trying to decide where he's going to end up next, and he's probably going to be a first or early second round draft pick.
Well, Rihanna, it's interesting you just talked about his image, because from what I was reading, initially people forget he was at Alabama under Nick Saban, and then he winds up at
Hutchinson. Got suspended there, too.
Correct. And then he winds up at Hutchinson Community College, and, part of the MO with him was not necessarily off-the-field issues. I know there was that arrest in between transferring, but, maybe not getting along with the coaching staff, behavioral issues. Is it fair to say that he completely changed his image? I mean, did you hear about anything off the field wise while he was at Tennessee?
The NFL teams will check on that, and they'll go deep. They will go very deep.
No, I've heard nothing since he's been here. I mean, and even that Alabama thing, there's always like, people, he knows it's going to be brought up. And he talked about that. He's like, yeah, I know. I'm going to have to explain everything that happened. I'm fine with that. I can explain it. Like, he doesn't seem so. I mean, I don't know deep into the details. Those people have the private investigators that'll be able to find much more than I can with my public records requests and everything, as much as we try. But since he's been here, he's nothing. I mean, we look pretty deep. We always try to, if there's stuff that comes up, that's not to say nothing did happen, but there was nothing that, no arrests, no team issues, no suspensions, nothing. And as I was saying before, there was enough reason for him to kind of get a little disgruntled, the first few years, because he just didn't, he wasn't getting as much time. But it seems to all, by all accounts publicly, that he really did. Whatever happened to Alabama, and even then, he still, when they played Alabama, he was very complimentary. He used to say, hey, I still have friends there. It was a great experience. It just didn't work out. So he never seemed like he held a grudge, or he took full responsibility for what happened. He never kind of said, hey, I'm bitter and this shouldn't have happened. And so, that unless they find something different, that's what I've come across. He just seems to realize that he kind of matured a little bit and has made the most of his second opportunity, or third, if you count the junior college, I guess.
Sure.
Well, Rihanna, last one for me, because I certainly appreciate the time and the insight that you've provided. Joshua Dobbs, to me, is an intriguing prospect, the quarterback, because of his arm and the way he was able to connect with Josh Malone, who's also another NFL prospect, a wide receiver. What have you been hearing about where you think Dobbs will wind up, and what's his ceiling? What's his upside based on what you've seen under center?
Yeah, he's, when we started this whole process, he was maybe – maybe drafted late round, maybe a free agent signing. And he's now, no, there's no question he's going to get drafted. It's just a matter of where. I've seen third, fourth round for some. As you know, the quarterback class is not, you guys I'm sure talking
right.
about this,
yeah.
not the deepest. So, and I think that benefits him, to be honest. I think he has done nothing but completely impress everyone since the season ended because of, I mean, getting him in a room is probably the best thing you can do because of his intellect. As you know, he's an aerospace engineering major. he's graduating a five-year program. He's graduating 4 years with all the responsibilities that come with being a quarterback and being in the SEC. And in a major that I couldn't even, like, spell half the words that they use and stuff they work on. I think, you know, the issues with him were always kind of his accuracy and his consistency. He struggled a little bit throwing-wise, but he's just got some intangibles on the field. Like, he makes plays out of nothing. And I know that's harder to do in the NFL when guys are bigger and faster. But he was going against some guys that are going to be pretty high draft picks, and he was able to, like, just pull plays out of, you know, out of the air. Like, when they were struggling, like, somehow they'd be third and 14, and he, with his legs, he'd pick up yards. He'd pick up, like, 16 yards. And his throwing has improved since because I think he's been able to dedicate more time to it. As I said, he was, you know, pretty busy here at Tennessee. And I really do think he's got a huge ceiling because of that factor. I think if you get him with a coach who can just, he can devote his whole time to football, which he never really got to do here, he's going to absorb everything, and he's going to pick up stuff. He's like a sponge, and he'll get to become a better passer because he'll have more time to dedicate to it and have more time to learn. I mean, you put him in front of a whiteboard, and that guy's going to wow every general manager because that's just, he's so smart, and his IQ on the field is so smart. He has issues. Consistency is one. He had some really bad, you know, turnovers where you wonder what he was looking at. Sometimes I think he just thought that he had to make stuff happen too much. But I think if you get him where he in a situation where he can learn for one or, you know, a few years, be a backup, he could be on the scout team maybe for a year, and there's a chance he could be a really special quarterback because he has a lot of he has a lot of the skills you need, and if you can just help with that throwing. And having worked at IMG Academy, you can already tell the progress he made just in that few months. And at Pro Day, I've never seen this. I've covered a lot of Pro Day. He scripted his whole throwing workout. He was the one that sat down and mapped out all the throws himself. No help. No one sat down with him. And he put it on himself, which was, like, you kind of expect that from him, but it's still impressive.
Well, I'm going to ask you a final question about Dobbs is, what type of NFL system do you think he will have the best chance to succeed in? Because I saw the same thing about his accuracy and his inconsistencies in his overall game, which, of course, you can't change. You could talk about how great he worked out in the last couple of months, but the game tape is still the game tape. And the scouts and the personnel guys are going to look at the game tape and say, look, under live bullets, this is what you are. And so there are going to be a lot of minds that won't be changed by whatever he's done at his pro day. So what do you see being a good offensive scheme fit for him? Because unlike many of the quarterbacks in this draft, he's taken snaps under center, which a lot of guys, they don't do nowadays.
Yeah, I think he could, you know, ideally it'd be a scheme where they give him a little bit of, you know, freedom with his legs a little bit. I mean, I think that is a key part. And you know what? It keeps defenses honest with him. It's that threat to run. I know that's not, you know, the NFL, it's not super popular. And, you know, that's the struggle with the kids that come from these spread offenses and these offenses that are all, and they, you know, get under center. He has worked. And I don't know. I don't know how much you can improve that. Like you said, sometimes live bullets, you just, you know, it's just you are what you are at some point, right? There's
sure.
just something where you just, there's some, but I do think, I think they need to try to use that threat of the run because he's just so done. He's just, for a quarter, he's made plays, and there is a fear of injury, too. I was always kind of, but he somehow always smartly maneuvered and never set himself up for huge injuries. I think that has to stay in his game because, to be honest, when I watched him this year, when he's running, it's kind of weird to say this, but everything seems to click better with him. You know, it's almost like he has to sort of start making plays with his legs for his arm to come. And I know if you watch the tape, you can maybe sense it if you've watched it. He just seems to – everything just seems to kind of fall into place if he can get that going where he's kind of running and passing instead of just, you know, one or the other. There was games where they just had him be very vanilla, and he just didn't seem to have it to click. So I know that's harder in the NFL to do. I don't know how you would do it, but I really believe that when he's doing multiple things – or in a game, it flows better for him. And it just seems like the wires all connect. I don't know how you do that. I mean, honestly, I can't tell you, like, this team, this is perfect for him. I think they're going to have to, you know, maybe trial and error and figure it out. And some teams aren't going to want him because of, you know, probably their system is what it is. But I do think you almost have to give him a little freedom because that's where he operates better that way. I don't know if it's because he's such a high intellect guy that he just needs to be like multiple things like at once to kind of just get him engaged. But there was games where, you know, you could see he kind of got into a rhythm and it wasn't just a throwing rhythm. It was, there had to be both elements a little bit involved. And I don't know, like I think his learning capacity is pretty big, so he could probably try to fit into something and try to learn it as best he could. But I know teams are always like, you know, we want to make it comfortable to the player. And if a team is willing to do that, I think they can, you know, I think he can have some upside. He's one that's just, I could say he could end up being a starting quarterback forever. And I could also say he can never play it down. Like, I just don't, he has that much potential yet. There's been enough on paper or on tape where you can just say, well, that might not work in the NFL. So it might not never work. So I would take a chance on him personally, just because I've, you know him and seen him. But like I said, I could also see him just not like ever, you know, not really doing much, because I've seen guys that I thought would in the NFL and they just doesn't translate,
course.
You know?
Well, the key
so
is.
I hope that's not too confusing for you guys.
No, not at all.
It's a crapshoot in one word. It's a crapshoot.
Which we talk about with most quarterbacks every single year. But
I just feel like, you know, there's never, like, everyone would, oh, yeah, I knew Dak Prescott was going to be that good. Like, yeah, right. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, like,
yeah.
Everyone, you know.
Tom Brady, who's that guy?
Like, I knew.
Yeah,
and,
I got you.
And then there's other ones where I'm like, that guy's for sure. And, like, he's, you know, he's out of the league.
Yeah, exactly.
Year, so
sure.
I just,
well, it goes.
I'm just glad I don't get paid to make those decisions.
No, none of us are. Trust me.
Absolutely. Well, it goes back to, like you said, it's about the system and whether or not the intellect, which is a strong asset in the classroom, could translate to the football field, and that certainly is a positive with respect to Dobbs. Well, Rhiannon, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for breaking down this Tennessee class, and look forward to hearing from you down the line in the future.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. Call me anytime.
You got it. Rhiannon Potke covers the Tennessee football team for the Knoxville News Sentinel, kind enough to break in and weigh in on this class that is very intriguing from a lot of different angles.
To give you guys a little bit more of an NFL perspective as to what she was talking about, I do see him more as a Tony Romo type who needs to incorporate some mobility in his game. I don't see him being an RG3 who has to do a ton of running and is always looking to turn the ball upfield and carry the ball. I don't think that's a good fit for him. But I do think he's a kind of guy like Aaron Rodgers, who you don't think about a lot as a mobile guy, but he is a mobile guy because he rolls the pocket. They move the pocket with him a lot. Doesn't mean he's necessarily got to go forward with the ball.
Well, and that's the key difference. You could be a mobile quarterback, but you pick and choose when you decide to actually get out of the open field. For example, Romo and Rodgers are two good examples where they have mobility, but they're not running up and down the field.
You don't consider them running quarterbacks.
Correct, exactly. But they have that asset that if a play breaks down, they can salvage it by then all of a sudden creating something. So I think Dobbs has that mobility factor, but if you've watched him enough, and this is what's impressive, and we talked about this off the air, the guy's got an arm.
He can wing it.
He can really throw it down the field.
He can wing it.
And it doesn't matter what personnel you have around him. He's going to find that guy. That, to me, is extremely attractive. So if he's around there, and, you know, in this draft guide that I'm looking at, he's projected to go in the sixth round. I mean, could he fall that late? Absolutely. Could a team take a flyer like a Dak Prescott in the fourth round? I could see that. But I think this player would be good value if you're looking for a quarterback and you're getting into that fifth to sixth round barometer and he's still there. I mean, he may be worth it because, you know, as Rhiannon mentioned, the intellect aspect, you can't teach that. You know, you can change the arm formation and the throwing motion. You can't teach intellect.
He's got the instincts.
Yeah.
He's got the intellect. He's got the arm. Much like a baseball scout will tell you when a pitcher throws 102 miles an hour, they're going to find some way to like him because he's got something you can't teach. So I'm with you on that.
That's the key. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines now for the remainder of the program. Get to your tweets. As I mentioned off the top, the players have reported back to the facility because they are going to start working out and so forth in terms of the beginning of the spring offseason program. It's voluntary, though. That is the key phrase to note during this time period. Most players show up, but it is voluntary, so not everybody is required to appear. But
we're here.
We are here, yes, but we've been here all offseason, so it's not much of a difference today. The only difference is that the players are going all about the facility, and Paul may not be able to get all he wants in the cafeteria today, but hey, listen, everybody's got to make sacrifices here within the Giants.
The fresh cookies are out already.
Well, that's important. Well, the players are not necessarily going for that, so you don't have any competition in that department. I was referring to maybe more of the popular foods, at least for them, the healthier foods. With respect to them. But we are going to open up the phone lines here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. You want to weigh in on the draft. You want to weigh in on the players reporting back and what we're going to see moving forward in the offseason program. Feel free to chime in. We got Ty on the line in Maryland. Ty, what is happening?
What's going on, fellas?
Hi.
Doing well, Ty. What do you got for us?
It's a great day for football. A great day
it's
for football.
It's always a great day for football. 365.
365, baby, all day, every day. Unfortunately, we lost Hankins.
Yep.
But it's a bit of a blessing in disguise, because if you look at it, we no longer have to worry about the situation with Hankins. That's no longer a mystery. Are we going to be able to sign him? Are we going to have to look for another D tackle? It's no longer a mystery. So I look at it as a silver lining in the situation. Now, okay. I wanted to make this clear, and I'm glad that both of you guys are on today, because yesterday you guys spoke on the D-tackle situation with Hankins and everything, and Paul, you touched a bit on Chris Wormley. Now, he is probably among my favorite D-tackles coming out of the University of Michigan, which, by the way, has a plethora of NFL stars coming out. And every last one of them were coached by NFL experienced coaches, one of which went to a Super Bowl. So you're looking at Chris Wormley, who here you have a guy who can transition from a defensive tackle. He's heavy enough to play defensive tackle, strong enough to hold the lineup at defensive tackle, but has the athleticism to play a defensive end. Now, that comes into play when you're looking at a nickel package, to where maybe you no longer have to worry about bringing JPP or Vernon down on the inside. You can leave them on the outside and maybe keep Wormley on the inside, or even push Wormley out on the outside and in defensive end, because he's that versatile as a defensive tackle. And I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that before I got to my next.
Start? Well, we talked about that yesterday too, Ty. I mean, that was one of the things we brought up, whether it makes more sense for the Giants to have that versatile defensive lineman if they go in the draft who can play on the inside and the outside, as opposed to just looking for a pure defensive tackle that could only play first and second down, and you're going to take him off the field on third down because there's really no pass rushing skill set. So, you know, Wormley, I think, is appealing because you don't have to take him off the field on first, second, or third down, because he has the skill set to stop the run on the inside and also move to the edge in pass rushing situations. So, I mean, I agree. I think given the fact that they lost Hankins, there's room to bring in that type of player. Now, does Double O have that type of skill set where he can also, I think, move in the inside and the outside? Yes, I think that exists on the roster, but, you know, there are questions remaining as to, you know, what he's going to pan out to be. So I agree with you. I think if you're the Giants and you're looking at the draft, to me, some of those players that can play inside and outside may be a little bit more appealing, as opposed to bringing in a defensive tackle that you're only going to keep on the field for first and second down. Now, with that being said, and I know, Paul, you want to add to this, Ryan Glasgow is appealing to me. He's another
Michigan
guy. I really like him.
I agree.
The thing with Glasgow is there's not really pass rushing skill sets for him.
You can get him on the third day, I think.
Correct.
Glasgow.
So he's going to be good value for a pure first, second down defensive tackle. But just know, you're not going to get a lot of pass rush.
He reminds me of Chris Hovan, who used to play for the Buccaneers back in their Super Bowl days.
Remember him. Remember him well. You know, like you said, that Michigan defensive line, look, Charlton's going to be a top pick in the first round. I mean, you're talking about a bunch of really good players coming out of this program at a very, very strong position. I'm with you, okay? I think the one thing to build off the caller we just talked about when talking about the Tennessee Vols, the one thing about Wormley is that he's a smart player. When you watch him, he knows what he's doing. He carries himself with assertiveness. He carries himself with confidence. You see it every snap. He knows where he's going. You never see him like in a daze or looking around or not being around the ball or being in open space. He is very, very determined on every play. He knows what he's got to do. You can just tell by looking at his body language.
Exactly. And I think a third-round pick would suffice for him. Hopefully he'll still be there. I think he will, but maybe in the later, in the early third round, they might start to look his way, but hopefully he'll still be there when it's our turn to pick.
That's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. If you think he's going to be there for the Giants late third, it's going to be tight. I'd like to think that they would have an opportunity if they don't get one in the first two rounds. I'd like to think he'd be there for them, but I think you might be asking for much, which is, again, I've been telling people for weeks, I think the Giants are going to move up in either the first, second, or third rounds. I believe they're going to do it.
I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to. If they're going to want to get a player like that, and it could come in any one of the first three rounds, they may, much like they did with Landon Collins, see somebody who they've got to jump up to get.
Right. Okay, now one more prospect. Maybe two more, and I'll try to make it quick. Jordan Lewis, I know I'm sticking on Michigan right now, but Michigan is my team. It has been for a long time.
Okay.
But Jordan Lewis is a guy who I really think is also a versatile player who is slated to be a nickel cornerback, but as the guy alluded to a while back when you guys did a take on Michigan players. He also defended on the outside in primary receivers, in which I think the guy who was talking about him said that he only got like 30 balls thrown his way last season. And that goes to show how good he is as a pass defender. And I wanted to know what you guys thought on that, as well as another prospect coming out of the University of Pittsburgh, James Conner. I really like him as a power back. I think he ran a 4.63 and a cancer survivor. We already have a cancer survivor on the team, Hurst. He's been a staple in a Giants organization for some years now, and I really like Connor's determination in his runs. I looked at his highlights, and the man is a beast. He's an absolute beast. He should have Beast on his last name instead of Connor. His name should be James Beast instead of James Conner. So I wanted to know what you guys thought.
I don't know if Marshawn Lynch is going to like that, but that's
okay.
Okay,
off the line.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate the phone call.
First of all, it was on March 24th, if you go back to the BBKL archive, that we talked to the media representative who talked about the Michigan Wolverines. So if you go back to March 24th, you should be able to replay that show and hear all about this plethora of Wolverines coming into the NFL. We've already talked about Connor. We like him as a power runner. We believe that he would provide some good value for somebody fourth or fifth round, but he's certainly not a first or second day pick, I don't believe. And if the Giants don't get a back by that time, you certainly would want to put him on your radar. As far as Lewis, did have a misdemeanor. Off-the-field incident that some teams are certainly going to want to question him about. I see him as a slot corner. There's no question about his pass coverage skills in my mind, but some of the things that I wrote down that I was questioning, his head turn at the end to finish a play, not always looking for the ball. I did question his physicality. I questioned his ability to fight against the run and run support. I thought he could use some more strength in run support. And so, liked his hands, liked his ability to close on the ball, but he didn't always finish the play.
He also had some issues with penalties, too. I wrote down he had 14 penalties over his career. Now, that may not be an overwhelming amount, but a little handsy, and that goes back to what you're talking about in terms of the fundamentals.
But again, terrific coverage skills.
Well, he had 42 passes defense. So
got skills. I mean,
very active, only surrendered 2 touchdowns. But here's the thing.
He'll need some polish.
Yeah.
But he's an NFL player.
And Ty brought this up the last caller, and I think this is also relevant to Cameron Sutton, who we just talked about at Tennessee, when Rhiannon mentioned he only gave up 3 touchdowns, Cameron Sutton. But my problem is when you look at how many touchdowns a corner gave up in college, you have to take into consideration the other members of the defense around them. Why? Because if
they
you're
may have
a quarter,
been killing the other
correct,
corner.
They're killing the other corner. So they're like, you know what? I'm not going to throw to that side because I'd rather focus on this side. Yeah. Now, that doesn't necessarily speak badly about the corner, but here's the thing. When you're a rookie.
It does the other guy.
When you're a, well, it does. No, but what I'm saying is when you're a rookie and you barely got thrown at. Okay, it's one thing if you're Darrell Revis and you barely got thrown out in the NFL. It's another thing when you're a senior. Then you join the ranks of an NFL secondary. They're now going to start targeting you because you're the one with the least amount of experience.
They will test you.
Then you see the true colors. So I wouldn't get too overhyped in terms of, oh, he only gave up 2 touchdowns, only gave up 3 touchdowns.
And to be honest, I don't even look at that stat for that very reason. Well, I don't even look at it.
And that's why I think it's important to emphasize. He also brought up Connor, which you just commented on. I also want to note that Jeff and I last Thursday spoke to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette beat writer for Pitt, provided a great deal of insight.
And that's on the archive,
too. That's on the archives as well. So if you want more on Connor and the rest of the class, certainly check that out. The one thing that is interesting about Connor, and this is not necessarily a negative, but if you want that running back who's a bully but can also catch the football, they didn't ask him to catch the football.
No.
So we don't really know what he could do as a receiver. We do know, based on his numbers, I mean, 16 touchdowns. He had over 1,000 yards. He was a workhorse. I don't think there's any question marks with respect to that. But they did not use him as a receiver. Now, if memory serves me correct, based on my notes here, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette beat writer said that he thinks he has the potential to serve as a receiver if they wanted to use him as that. But for the most part, he was a strong physical runner, 216 carries, over 1,000 yards, 16 touchdowns this past season. So, I mean, he was certainly their workhorse, and he overcame, obviously, the knee injury, not just the cancer. That's also important to note. Had an MCL injury, which he overcame in addition to the cancer. So, I mean, the toughness and the will I don't think should be questioned.
One word that I use for my characteristics when I jot these things down, I wrote down angry. He plays angry. And if you can understand what that is, it's a guy who shows a lot of punch, a lot of energy, a lot of feistiness down in and down out. You see a guy who's really, you know, given everything on every play. He plays angry, fights for that extra yard, fights for that first down, fights to get out of bounds, gives that little extra, plays through the whistle all the time. Coaches love that.
Well, if you could overcome cancer and a knee injury, I think that toughness is apparent in the way he goes about playing football.
It is.
Let's head back to the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino with you here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. And we're now going to check in with Shreyas in Massachusetts. Shreyas, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Paul and Lance?
How we doing, Shreyas?
Hi.
All right, so I came in to talk about, well, first of all, I thought that the reporter was had some good info, and I like that. I quite enjoyed it.
That's why we bring him on.
Thanks for listening.
Appreciate it. We've been doing it all month. Hope you've enjoyed them.
Yeah, all of them are awesome. And I really wanted to talk about specifically Josh Dobbs. And I've kind of studied him pretty extensively. Well, in my opinion, pretty extensively. And obviously, I'm not going to claim that I'm some film guru or whatever. But what I see from him, I really like him. This guy has some big-time potential, as you guys said. This guy, he can run effectively. But most of all, his attitude is what gets me, like, going about him. Even though he has that Eli Manning attitude, even though everything is falling around him, he is totally okay. He's like, fine with it. Okay, let's find a way to manage it. And that's what, like, really makes me think that Josh Dobbs can be successful.
Well, the skill set is there. He has talent. He has skills. But as we all know, it takes more than a skill set to make a successful NFL career.
Indeed.
And so, you know, and he has intangibles. He has the smarts and stuff. But consistency, I can't tell you how many guys have lost spots on rosters in this league because they could not be consistent.
Very Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
You know, you know what they call those guys? Coach killers. Yeah. And they find themselves out of the league real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the thing about Dobbs is that he's somehow different. He has, like, if you look at his offensive line, not somehow, but, like, if you look at his offensive line, these guys are a train wreck. I mean, the receivers are pretty good. Like, the receivers and tight ends that they had out there, they were pretty good. But their offensive line let them down big time. Almost on every play, as a default, they had about, like, maybe half a second to make a play, or else it was broken.
Well, I think it's fair to say the Volunteers as a whole have been a disappointment the last couple of years, don't you think?
Yeah, I guess we can put it that way.
I mean, to be honest, and when that happens, you usually can't single out one particular unit and say, oh, they held up their end of the bargain. No, if it kind of all goes bad, it kind of all goes bad.
Well, and part of that is because of the injuries that they've also had to deal with, too.
I know you're a proponent for a good offensive line.
Yeah, you know how I feel. You've seen the show.
and I totally agree with you. I think an offensive line, other than a quarterback, is the most important foundation of a team. Mm-hmm. And other than the defensive line, which
the
is
trenches,
trench thing,
the trenches, yeah, yes, sir.
So, I think that if all of the offensive line, not just a single person, is that bad, it gets to the point where player has certain habits indulged in him or like inserted in him, basically. So what Dobbs has become a victim to bad habits. Like, for example, there are many times when his wide receivers are wide open, but he's forced to run because mm-hmm. it's a habit. It's a habit thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you get that happy feet type of feeling. I mean, we've talked about it with NFL quarterbacks where even when the pass rush is not there because maybe you've lost so much confidence in the group protecting you that you're still anticipating
exactly.
So therefore you begin to run and so forth.
And to be fair, remember, when the guy is putting on that Tennessee helmet and he's playing for the Volunteers on Saturday, he's trying to win a game. He's not thinking about, I've got to do all the mechanical things right because NFL scouts are looking at me and I want to be an NFL prospect. No, he's trying to win a game. He's trying to go to a bowl. He's trying to help the alums be happy.
No doubt.
And that's where I think his fault lies. I think if he wanted to be I'm going to focus on my mechanics. I'm going to be this perfect mechanic, Tom Brady, accuracy, speed, trade-off guy. Then I think he could have done that, but like he wasn't really in any type of position to do so. His defense was decent this year, but if you look at the past years, it's not been that good. Tennessee and their offensive line has been tragically bad. So it puts him in a position where he has to do something to try to win the game. That's why he runs so much.
Well, and Treyas, that's why I think any NFL executive and scout needs to take into consideration the talent around the quarterback, just like I think you got to do that in the NFL. But what I think is important to note is Kamara, the running back, and Dobbs, the numbers they put up this past season, despite the offensive line issues, that says something about the player's skill set. Because Kamara, he had just over 280 touches, yet he still had 23 touchdowns. And I've watched a lot on Kamara, and there were plays where the guy's running to the right, there's nobody blocking, and he finds a way to maneuver around seven guys, and he finds the end zone.
You're right.
So if you could do that, then that means that whether your offensive line is good or bad, you have the skill set, the vision to adjust on the fly.
You know, basically, your phone call is the secret to what every NFL scout has to come up with or is faced with time and time again.
Yep.
How can you project that guy out of his current situation and into our situation in the NFL on our team and our scheme with our players? That projection is so gray. It is so not tangible that it keeps scouts up at night on end sometimes because they're like, how do I figure out where this guy, what is he?
Well, and Trace, I know you want to make one more comment, but I will tell you this. I would like to hear this type of phone call during the course of the regular season when all we get into is conversations about how blame the quarterback, blame the quarterback. Because what you're pointing out, Trace, is the fact that
– I wanted to call several times, but you see, I'm in school right now, so –
No, completely understandable.
Specifically all those Eli critics out there who just don't get it.
And not just Eli. I'm just talking about across the NFL landscape where people just point to quarterback play being the ultra contributing factor
to
why a team struggles. And you pointed out that, look, you got to look at the elements around the quarterback.
Very astute call.
Yeah, real
Thank
quick.
Thank you. Go ahead, one more?
You had one other point, Trace. What other point, right?
Paul.
Yeah.
Paul. Is George Kittle, like, the most Paul Vitino prospect of this year?
I love him. You're right. I think he's a heck of a player. And, you know, my problem is look, how can you not love O.J. Howard? How can you not love Njoku?
Oh, yeah.
There are so many terrific tight ends in this draft, but another one, by the way.
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. Nice transition, by the way.
I'm going to tell you, I messaged somebody sent me a Twitter message earlier in the day or yesterday, and they asked me about Engram. And I said, look, it's Howard and Njoku, Freak. 1 and 2, okay? The next level of tight ends for me are Butt and Kittle and Everett. Engram is not on my radar. I am not an Engram guy.
Engram out of Ole Miss, by the way.
There are a bunch of people
Engram
who
is like an oversized wide receiver.
Yeah, and you know that's not my kind of guy.
Well, but if you're not looking for maybe that blocking in the trenches guy, he may be a good fit. I think it depends on what team you're looking at.
Wide receiver. That's the thing.
Well, I want a tight end who at least shows me he's a real tight end.
Not a guy who should
be a wide receiver.
Well, and that's why I think it goes back to
Amaro, when the Jets took him out of Texas Tech?
Oh.
You know, I didn't want any part of him either.
Second round, right?
All right. Hey, thank you.
I would spend a second round on that guy.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, Trace, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Let's hear from Carl in Syracuse. Carl, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, Carl.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
Good stuff on Kamara. He play a limited role with the Giants, too, because we wouldn't need him as an every down back. And, you know, with his limited role in Tennessee, I mean, wow, he is incredible.
He's going to be good.
I was wondering about those off-field concerns myself, but, you know, she put that in pretty good perspective. Hopefully he grew up a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm with you guys on wanting a larger power back, too. But, you know, if things don't pan out and you never know how things fall in the draft, I saw an interesting name come up as a later round smaller guy but plays big is Aaron Jones from UTEP. And he's a big-time character guy. You know, his parents were both military. I think they're still active. And just a real workhorse. He's smart, very positive, like Kamara, like, you know, is always positive, smiling, laughing. Have you seen him at all?
Well, he's not a very big guy, though. Keep that in mind, too.
Reminds me of Paul Perkins in size. He's like 208 pounds, inch shorter, but, you know, still has good measurables, you know, with his quicks and his elusiveness, but he shows good power when he runs through arm tackles and good stiff arm.
Well, they're listing him at 5'9", 208, 4'5", 6", and the 40. I did not do work on him. I did film work on 16 running backs in this draft who I thought would go fifth rounder up, or should I say fifth rounder before. I did not get word from the people that I talked to that he would be gone by that time. So sixth and seventh round running backs I did not do work on. So I can't speak to him film-wise. I will say his vertical jump at 37.5 is absolutely impressive. But, again, we're talking about combine numbers, and I'm not one who likes to rely on combine numbers. I like to look at the tape. If you want me to look at him, I'll be glad to look at him, and you can call me back another time.
Well, you're right, though, Carl. I mean, they're projecting
They're
projecting him to go in about the sixth round. So, I mean, I think that you could certainly get him in the late rounds. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, you brought up that you see Perkins, correct me if I'm wrong, as perhaps similar to him. And, you know, Perkins to me, and I've said this on multiple occasions, he's the type of guy that to me can get 17 to 18 carries a game.
Well,
I have no problem with giving him that workload.
If your comment is that he is similar to Perkins, and obviously his size and his frame don't make him a power back, to me, I don't know how he fits on the team.
Well, and that's why I'm bringing that up, because I'm also looking at you brought in Sean Drone. You have Orleans Darkwa back. I mean, you have guys that to me can be the complements. Everybody's talking about workhorse, workhorse, workhorse. If Perkins is the workhorse or he's the main back, let's look at it that way. There's enough complements on the roster right now that I think that they can make do where finding the running back to save this team is not necessarily priority number one.
Right, and I think that even though he is small, he does run with good power, and he doesn't go down easy with arm tackles, and he doesn't look for contact, but he does lower the shoulder, and I know guys are going to be bigger in the NFL, so it's, I guess, you know, the crapshoot. Can he withstand the rigors of the NFL?
Well, he's had two injuries that he's had to deal with, too, keep in mind. He had the rib injury, and then he suffered a torn ligament in his left ankle. But he bounced back because he's coming off of a very productive season. So, I mean, I think that he's proven that he could overcome injuries. And you brought up the fact that he's small. Maurice Jones-Drew was a small guy, too, and he ran with a great deal of power.
He was.
So, I mean, I don't think size is necessarily a downgrade. I'm just thinking if you bring somebody like him in, you know, what type of a role is he going to provide, especially, and I'm looking at his numbers here, you know, I don't see a great deal of receptions in his numbers, too, keep in mind, Carl. And to me, if you're going to get on the field, you have to bring something to the table that maybe some of these other running backs don't do.
Again, he's equating him to someone similar to Perkins. That means he's just not a fit. And quite honestly, I don't care if he catches the ball or not because that's not what the Giants need.
No, but
the Giants need a power back. They need someone who's going to slam the ball up in a hole.
The more that you could do, the more of an option you have to get on the field. That's my big
point. If he's a sixth-round pick, it doesn't, you know, he's going to have a lot of holes
in his game. He's going to have to play special teams, too.
That's for sure.
And I'm not seeing a great deal of special teams.
I guess what we're trying to tell you is I don't see him as a fit here, but maybe he's got the skill set to make somebody's roster.
Right.
All right, Carl.
Thank you.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks I'm not
so
moving off Samaje Perine.
Well, I know that that's your guy. And listen, there's quality depth. There's quality depth at running back, too.
Hey, we've discussed Connor, and Connor would be a nice third-day choice. There's no question about that.
And also the fact that he overcame a number of injuries. I mean, you like to see guys that could bounce back and so forth.
Giants
Let's check
have
out.
Had to know over the years.
That's
a
what I'm
bunch
saying.
Of those
yeah,
types
had,
of guys I mean, who have gone through adversity and tragedy and made it. So,
Mod Bradshaw is a guy that comes to mind in terms
of
overcoming.
How about Mark Herzlick?
Yeah. Well, Herzlick, I mean, if you're looking for that cancer connection, too, he fits that bill. But I was looking for, you know, guys that, you know, just had injuries and so forth. Let's take a quick glance at Twitter before we wrap up to see if anybody else wants to weigh in on some of the information that we threw out, especially the Tennessee prospects. Let's see, Matthew at RTRFan21. Don't forget that Tennessee's wide receivers were the worst in the SEC at drops. Well, Malone is their main prospect coming out at the wide receiver position. And I know we didn't talk a lot about that with Rhiannon, but, I mean, he was a five-star recruit coming out of high school. He was their state Mr. Football in Tennessee, so he stayed local.
Underachiever, though.
Well, he had a breakout year this past season. I agree. Prior to that, they expected him to have much more of an impact. I think that's a fair way to describe his game. This year, which was by far his best year statistically, 50 receptions, 972 yards, 11 touchdowns. 6'3", he's got good size. He goes after the football. Does he have blazing speed? No. But the size is going to be what's appealing to NFL teams to bring in somebody like Josh Malone.
They'll certainly look at him. The measurables will force somebody to look at him.
That's what they're going to do. Now, if the point is, and Matt, maybe you could clarify on Twitter if you're still listening, and we may get to it off the air, but I don't know if the point is to say that Dobbs didn't have a great deal of talent to work with, and maybe you have to take that into consideration when you're evaluating Dobbs, or you're making more of a commentary on the Tennessee wideouts, because I think that could go both ways. If you're pointing out that Tennessee's wide receivers struggled a bit, I mean, that's to take into consideration with Dobbs what he was working with, in addition to offensive line problems, maybe wide receivers that didn't always come through. But from what I saw on film, Dobbs and Malone had very strong campaigns this past season. They had no problem hooking up this past year. Earlier in their careers, I think maybe there's more to say with respect about that. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. If Njoku is off the board, what do you think about Ashland tight end Adam Sheehan in day 2? Now, he's the under-the-radar guy because he's not out of a power program, clearly.
Yeah, and that's one of those guys, again, who gives scouts headaches because you have to figure out how to project.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about a totally off-the-radar, off-the-map program. And you look at him, and he's a man among boys. There's no question about it. So now how do you project a guy like that? You guys remember Anthony Doble, the wide receiver who came over from Europe last year and tried to make the Giants roster, and it turned out he didn't even make the practice squad. His tape against those European teams, he was a man among boys. He was a very intriguing prospect to look at. You looked at it and you said, my goodness, the way he's dominating, he must have something to bring to the table. But then he got here against NFL players at this level, this caliber of competition during training camp, and you kept waiting for that polish and that shine to come through, and this level was too much for him.
Now, on the flip side, then there's the Brett Jones of the world, who also I think is similar, because remember, he went to school up in Canada, was in the CFL, where there's a much bigger gap between the defensive line and the offensive line, and he slowly made...
He's an NFL player.
...a transition. So I think it depends on maybe what position
you're
playing.
It's so hard.
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's very rare for guys from those smaller programs. Much more common in basketball, Paul, I think.
Well, look what Marpet did, the offensive lineman, who actually turned out well.
So notice we've got two examples now on the offensive line. Yeah.
From D3. Yeah. Anyway.
It's tough to do that because of the competition that you go up against. But he'll get an opportunity, and then it's a matter of whether or not during training camp, I mean, he can separate himself from the rest of the pack. Well,
one comment I want to read here before we go. I am Will Ruiz has a great comment here. Earn your paycheck, referring to the Giants offseason program starting today and the players coming in to do their workouts for strength and conditioning purposes. I happen to agree. I like that. I think, and the Giants have been very good with attendance over the years with this offseason program. Unless there's a really, really good reason why you can't be here, I think it's a good sign when you see a very high level of participation.
And it builds camaraderie, too, because
yes,
the guys are around one another without necessarily the pads and the
helmets. We're a happy bunch here.
Yes, so, well, you're happy. I don't know about me. I don't know if I'm on cloud nine like you. And real quickly, Matt Wade back in to clarify. I meant that Dobbs didn't have a great supporting cast besides Malone and Kamara. So that was what his point was, as opposed to a negative commentary on Malone's upside and so forth. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Thanks so much for the interaction. As usual, Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running again all week long, noon Eastern, as we take you for 60 minutes with all the latest news with respect to the Giants, as well as getting you set for the NFL draft. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday right here on Giants.com.